Let's start the recording. Yeah, we are on live. So today, before we actually go over to the episode, we will introduce you a very exciting news. That is, Mr. Rizdebski.
Oh, by the way, you can actually meet us in person very soon. That's between 20th and 24th of March.
Oh, and where?
We are at CeBIT, or to be more precise, we are at VR at CeBIT.
What is that?
That's actually a very special year for CeBIT and for virtual reality, because while CeBIT is one of the biggest innovation conferences, or expos actually, that's no longer a conference, it's already an expo, in Europe and worldwide, this year, one of the halls is going to be devoted to virtual reality.
A whole and hall augmented just reality. For virtual reality? That's amazing.
Well, not the whole one. It's going to be around 2,000 to 3,000 square meters.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still devoted just for virtual reality, where developers, community, business partners, industrial partners can meet together and discuss different solutions of virtual reality, how far virtual reality is, how can we help mm-hmm. each other.
I heard there's also an upload party.
Yeah, that would be Thursday evening. Thursday evening, if you have Hackvention ticket,
you can visit it.
Or you are actually the exhibitor, you can visit the upload party.
I guess the speakers can also visit. And by the way, speaking of speakers, oh my gosh, there are also really, really, really good speakers there.
There are over 20 developer innovator workshops.
Yep.
And talks. I cannot even count to so many.
Yeah. And they are all very interesting. I'm going to give a talk. I think there will be a talk from Sasha Tweeny that you heard already on one of our episodes. And I'm pretty sure there will be more people that you're already familiar with or you actually would like to figure out that they exist, right?
There will be also a panel discussion between big automotive companies on Thursday.
Yeah.
Our workshop,
exactly.
Our meaning Virtual Spice workshop is going to be on Monday.
Yeah, and we, virtual reality fans and our lovely Research VR podcast crew, meaning we too will be running around and recording exciting podcasts for you.
So if you want to be a guest, just let us know or exactly. find us. Finding us might be tricky, so just try to contact us.
We have Twitter. Just keep spamming on Twitter and we will finally answer.
Okay, without further ado,
we would say we switch to the episode today, which is a preparation in a certain sense.
For industrial solutions in virtual reality, aka
Hooray.
Car configurator.
Okay, then tune in.
Here in a moment.
Hello and welcome to the next episode of Research VR, where we dig deep beyond the realms of virtual reality. Today we are joined by the usual co-host, me, Peter Lakoff, and Krzysztof Zdebski.
Hello.
Hi, Chris. But we are also having two wonderful guests, David Chalakian.
Hello.
Who is a software engineer at VirtualSpice, and Sebastian Mattes.
Hi.
Who is an IT consultant at Lufthansa Industry Solutions. And today the topic will be, surprisingly, virtual reality car configurator. And why this topic is actually not as boring or not as strange as it sounds and not as far away from science, we will, I guess, figure out in the next 40 to 50 minutes. So, first of all, let's have our guests introduce themselves. So, David Chalakian, what's your background?
I have studied IT science and with a focus on game development. And I made my first contact back then with the DevKit 1 of the Oculus Rift and made a student project with it.
Good times.
It was really interesting.
Similar to us, right, Chris?
Yeah. We actually started from Durovius Dive.
Oh, yeah.
So like the beginning.
Yeah, pre-cardboard. Okay.
Yeah, but it ended up being more like a tech demo, mm-hmm. not really a software. And after that, I got to write my bachelor's thesis on a VR topic as well, on the VR car configurator topic.
Oh, what a coincidence.
Yes. And now I'm working at Virtual Spice as a software engineer on VR topics as well.
And what do you do at Virtual Spice?
I'm a software engineer with focus on user experience design. Mm-hmm. So I'm practically the guy who is responsible for you to have a pleasant experience in VR.
A very important role.
Yes.
Now, coming to Sebastian, what's your background?
So my background is I studied media technology and communications
which is like, a field that is a bit of IT, a bit of media, a bit of marketing, a bit of communication. So yeah, it's a field that is not exactly VR, but it lends itself a lot to this topic because VR is a topic that touches all these fields. So actually got into VR in mid 2015 via an internship in the automotive sector, where I worked on a sales VR configuration system and also wrote my master thesis on this topic. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, I'm an IT consultant at Lufthansa Industry Solutions. My special area of expertise there is, of course, again, virtual reality. And my job is to design and develop VR solutions for our customers in industry, automotive, aviation, logistics. And VR is actually, VR technology is increasingly important in those in these industries, an important tool to help them advance their digital transformations. Mm. Yeah, and that's what I do.
Especially in the context of Industry 4.0, the worldwide concept known only in Germany.
That's true. Maybe before we confuse people, you just said digital transformation and Industry 4.0. Those two words are really, as Chris just described, occurring only in Germany, because Industry 4.0 is describing something that everyone else around the world apparently did already, putting IT in your manufacturing. But what is digital transformation? I hear this word quite often.
Yeah, so digital transformation is actually translating, or basically advancing your business processes into the digital age. So a lot of stuff that happens in industrial companies is still very manual and very, very not digital. And of course, since those are processes which are and systems which are historical and many years old, you actually need to have very very active and very a very involved process to get everything digital. Mm-hmm. Which is not that easy, because you can't do it in a day, because you have so many systems
and so many people
and you need to all align it so it fits well together in a complete digital strategy.
So coming back to the car configurators, most of our audience have seen one of those. There are like a lot of publicly available ones, right?
Yeah, you can just try one and then go on a website of one of the car of one of the car manufacturers around the world, and there is probably one configurator button on every major car manufacturer site.
It seems to become very important to have customizations. Customer love to adjust their product. And I would with a very simple mind say, well, we just put some 3D data in, have a slider, it's done, right? And then just basically put the same in VR. So you seem to have done some science on it. And why was it worth write a master thesis about it? Why would it worth actually work on it if it's technically just that simple, I would assume?
Well, as for me, it was my bachelor's thesis. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit different than Sebastian's. But in general, the thing is that it was not a game we made in VR, but it was a business application. Mm-hmm. And there are right now, as to my humble knowledge, not any real VR business applications out there. So what we did was do or design a software where you don't have any kind of relation point related software where you can look at how other people designed their business application VR software, and there just are no best practices for designing business applications in VR. Mm.
So what are actually the differences that you are referring to? So you just underlined that you need to build a business application different or even totally different than the game application.
Well, the main difference is the focus point, because game applications focus on the user having fun using the application. Mm. So the point where the user tries out or the user plays the gaming application, he probably has already bought the application. So the manufacturer of this application has already made his or her money with it.
Yes.
And for business applications, it's different, because the application itself is there for selling you something. So the application is made for you not, well, first and foremost, not to make you enjoy the application.
One thing. Are we actually talking about specifically marketing business applications or business applications in general?
So, when we are talking like car configurations, configurators, those are usually a sales system and usually customer-facing system. So what is in the primary difference to me is, of course, the audience. And when you have the audience for like a first-person shooter game is probably not exactly the same audience as you would have when you're trying to sell like a new car. Or
so in the end, we are actually talking right now about business-to-customer application.
Yes.
Not business-to-business.
No,
right?
Exactly.
Okay. No, yes. So what are the challenges? And I think your side, Sebastian, was to rather go scientifically into that, right?
Right. So my master thesis actually was an empirical study to actually see what is the benefit of having VR in a configurator, and what is the benefit for the customer? Mm-hmm. So and then. Basically, you would have to ask yourself, why actually do we need configurators, and what is missing from non-VR VR configurators, and how can we make, VR do the stuff that is missing?
Yeah. And what are the results?
So I think you have to start asking yourself, why do we need car configurators? Or why do we need product configurators in general? It's not really limited to car configurators, and it's the hot topic of mass customization. Mm-hmm. And when you look at many products that are you can mass customize, you have a lot of choices to make. And when you actually just have like a breakfast cereal, cornflakes, and stuff, then you can configure those too. But the impact of doing so is much much smaller than configuring cars. Cars
is
very risky and costly decision. So a configuration system is there to help the customer make a good choice and then to actually have a satisfactory experience with the product. So basically, we have to look at how can we enable the customer to make a better choice, and of course to also, use the opportunity to upsell them. Of course, so that is. There are marketing goals, there are process goals, and those goals are both equally important, because if the customer makes a poor choice for themselves, they might still buy the car, or they might get scared off and perhaps just quit and go to the next manufacturer.
Yeah, that's how it is.
Have you heard of the Hicks Law? Hicks Law is coming from actually usability and design topic. And it's a rule where the more choices you have, the longer the decision time.
Right.
And in marketing, the result would be that the more choices you have and the longer it takes to make a decision, the less likely it is that you are going to buy it. How does it play into the car configurators where you actually have a bazillion of choices?
Right. It does factor right in. Not only does it decrease the likelihood of the customer to actually go to the next step, and actually, the next step would be to when we are talking about cars, would be actually to go to a dealer and actually get a test drive and stuff. And so there's already a lot of friction between that and between being on a website and surfing around and taking the phone or going outside actually to a dealer. So there's a lot of friction, and you can lose the customer if it takes too long. Mm-hmm. But also the customer would actually. If it takes longer for them to customize and optimize their decision, then the benefit would be, then they won't just do that, and they're losing out on better customization because the effort to go through that process is too high and the costs are too high for them, like opportunity costs. So we have to reduce that. That's.
Is there like an optimal level? Like if you have too little customization, customers will just say, okay, I cannot get what I want. And we already established that there is an upper cap of customization. So is there a lower cap of customization that you need?
Yeah, of course. So the mass customization is actually to have a product tailored to the demand of the customer. And if you just have one product without any choices, then of course especially since the customers are used it, used to having this choice. So, of course, you cannot just take the choices away. It makes, I think the important thing is to give the customer a space to like experiment and play around with their possible choice. Mm-hmm. And this space can be provided using a virtual reality and basically have like a sandbox for the customer to play around until they have a satisfactory result. Mm-hmm. So they can actually decide how much they want to customize the product.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So what are the parameters that customers want to customize in the car?
Well, for a normal car configurator, you can just take a look at some random example. Mm-hmm. But in general, you have like the exterior colors, interior colors, mm-hmm. Radios, headlights, backlights, interior seating. What was it called again? If it's leather seats or normal
the trim.
The rims, of course, are a very well. Mm-hmm. Maybe not important for everyone, but for most customers with a lot of money, rims are important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about the additional features or utilities?
So you mean like the
how far can I should I be able to customize my engine, or how far should I be able to customize? Which utilities do I want to have? Like,
well, normally your options with engines are limited with cars. Like, you have I don't know, maybe four or five different engines with different gasoline types for every car.
But I don't think that in choosing the engine is like the biggest decision those days people do. It's like really about customization for my personal needs, right? I mean,
like for example, if you have kids,
do they fit inside?
Exactly.
Stuff, you know, and that's why I would go there. And also,
you want a child seat.
Yeah. Does it fit my favorite color?
Yeah.
Does it fit my personality? I mean, if you're traveling a few hours to work, you kind of would like to have your vehicle to be also part of you. That's still a quite decent feeling.
Yeah. Take another example. If you are someone, for example, a musician, and you travel a lot around a lot with heavy equipment, and you need to always be aware of how much space you have in your car, virtual reality could be one very decisive thing to make people just get a grasp of how big their interior is.
So the use cases of VR in this particular case, I think, are quite obvious. And regards how the whole B2B and also B2C business can gain from VR, we can discuss in the end. But what are the UI challenges?
My question is, why is it obvious? What are the features I want to see in virtual reality that I cannot see on the desktop?
Well, obviously, have you ever wanted to buy a car before?
I all the time want to buy a car, but in Osnabrück it really doesn't make sense to have one, and I just finished studies, so my wallet cannot handle this.
But imagine if you wanted to buy a car. Would you buy your car online from a website after just configuring the car?
Tesla just sells the cars on the website. You cannot buy it anywhere else.
But they have like three cars to choose from, so...
Yes.
I definitely would like to take a test drive, but from like the visual components, what's the advantage of seeing a car, like a 3D model of a car, on a desktop that I can grab with the mouse and rotate and see from the different perspective? What is virtual reality bringing to the table?
Well,
So basically, you have to imagine that when you configure your car online and then go to the dealer and want to try out your car, you want to like test drive your car, you're not getting your car because it's built to order market. You're getting, they have like, perhaps if you're lucky, one or two models of like a similar configuration of what you chose there, and you get to try that. And with virtual reality, you can basically try to get to get the customer as close as possible to their personal car that they themselves configured that could be theirs today. So it would give them two kind of benefits. First, the first benefits is the diagnosticity of information. So give them as much as possible information that would help them diagnose their choices. One of them, like, is having, does the car feel spacious enough? So mm-hmm. if you have a 2D picture, you have like 10 different views or 20 or whatever. And those are all from one perspective. And but you can't really sit in the car with VR. Mm-hmm. You can obviously do that, like move your head around, get a feeling of how spacious the car mm-hmm. is, or get a feeling how particular materials feel, materials that you may not have experience before your car is being built, mm-hmm. like picking a leather or picking a color based on how it reflects the okay. environments and stuff. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I think so. That is the anyone who cares about how their purchase looks like, and I guess also you, Chris, usually choose not the pink phone cover, but the one that fits maybe your phone, maybe your environment.
Who knows? Maybe
your
I have a secret he pink doesn't. Cover home.
He doesn't. I checked his home.
Maybe he would buy the pink cover. It was only $2. Like,
I mean, a car is a very expensive thing, and you kind of want to be, you know, to be sure that you want to buy it. And also, I guess with everything else that you can customize, I mean, it kind of is to people who care kind of more obvious. But the question is how to do it, right? I mean, that you would like to configure your car or any other object in VR is, to me, something that occurs to a lot of people. It's not that untrivial. I mean, yeah, you could discuss what precisely the customer gains, but more importantly is how to build it, right?
You mean you want to, in VR, you want to change your environment somehow.
Yeah, you need to interact with the car, right? Yeah. Because with the desktop, I imagine I have a mount, you know, I can click around. Yeah, we all seen beautiful websites. Yes. How to do it in VR? That's a big question.
That's a really interesting topic because that's one of the points I told you earlier about. Mm. We have no reference mm. for. So what you need to think about is, in regards to design, is you need to make your design reflect exactly what the application is built for. So do you want to give your user really that much freedom of view, for example? Because for room scale VR, you mm-hmm. could just stand up, or you could not only sit in the car, but you could actually, you know, put your head through the steering wheel and just look inside the car.
We had that situation with our experiment that we did at Virtual Spice 2. Long time ago, before you joined us, we had a car configured to 2 just as an experiment of a visualizer in VR. And it was done with first DK2 and then with mm-hmm. Oculus Rift, the mm-hmm. CV1. So you had some sort of room scale.
Yeah.
And so people were going for benchmarking the software and looking through the hood. And when they stood yeah. up, they were actually going through the roof and that sort of thing.
So as a car manufacturer, do you want to do that? Or do you want your user to do that? That's one of the big questions you have to answer. And as well as, well, the obvious interaction points for configuring a car are, for example, the headlights, if you want to change the headlights.
Okay.
Or right. the outer door, if you maybe want to change the exterior color, or maybe the...
What do I change about the headlights?
There are different headlights for cars.
So like models, I change the... like.
Well, it reflects in the model as well, a bit. I mean, neon, what are the standard lights again for a car?
The xenon lights.
I mean, xenon lights look different than other headlights for cars.
Okay.
So you would see that in the model. Mm-hmm. And maybe if you could switch on the lights, you would see the difference in how the lights shine upon the street, mm-hmm. for example.
In your bachelor and master thesis, did you have to write a custom lighting solution, or the Unity thing was enough?
No, we didn't write a custom lighting solution. So the focus actually there was not on achieving the most
high fidelity,
most high quality. It was more like having a concept of a complete, how could a complete mm-hmm. Configurator look like, mm. and not. That is what I wanted to say. There's not just like utilitarian benefit for the customer to see how exactly does that stuff look like, mm-hmm. how exactly do the reflections work. That is just one aspect. The more important aspect is mm-hmm. also there's a very hedonistic dimension to buying mm-hmm. a car. So a car is not just a collection of pieces on 4 wheels. It's actually what is being sold is like a mobility concept, some kind of a lifestyle. And so virtual reality can help us to provide a product experience, a virtual product experience before the product is even made, which means if I can get the user close to the car they designed themselves, in quotation marks, they have not really designed it themselves, that they help design that particularly car that is staying there. And it can be theirs. They can go sit in there, they can adjust it to their liking. So that's a virtual product experience that gets them emotionally attached to their car. And it's also some kind of shopping experience. It's different than just going through like a list of 200 options. And so you want to design the experience in a way that allows the customer to discover their own car.
So it sounds like you guys have a, let's call it, scientific framework behind the car configurator that you try to do. Can you tell us more about the science of car configurator?
Yeah, of course. So in the end, you want the customer. In the end, you want the customer to accept and use the system, and you want the customer to prefer to having a non-VR configurator. So that is basically, if you are going from the end and say your result is you want one, for the customer to have a better configuration experience, and two, to sell more cars. I already mentioned the having like a hedonistic and then utilitarian dimension of use. Then you want to make sure that it had both a benefit in providing very diagnostic important information to make a decision, providing a sandbox to create it, and also to create a concept which is enjoyable and has an aesthetic dimension and plays to the motives and dimension and emotions of the user. So that is the two streams you need to which are equally important or almost equally important for the customer and the sales process.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and you need to you have with virtual reality, you have the option to give the user a feel of a telepresence, being present with the car, being present in the environment that plays to my motives, like a mountain road or a city, wherever the particular car fits in, and to have them in control of the car, in control of what they do with it, how they design it, and having a dimension of vividness, product qualities, basically those can be experienced virtually without having to go to the dealer and try it out, or even having them go to the dealer and basically being able to combine a virtual and a physical car experience is also an option, where you can provide basically like the haptical feeling of a physical car. And at the same time, providing the look of the specific customized car they designed themselves. So yeah,
that's actually a good moment to go one step back, because before I interrupted David when he was talking about limiting the user.
Well, one thing is to want the user to be in control, and the other thing is to as a car manufacturer, you don't want to the user to be able to do anything he wants with the car. You don't want, well, maybe in some cases you want the user to try out how safe the car is by just crashing the car into a wall.
Oh, that would be fun.
And see how the car reacts, you know, to the crash.
Who's going to break first, me, car, or the wall?
The thing is, in virtual reality, you could actually do that. I mean, what better way to test your safety features of the car than just crash it virtually, because it doesn't do anyone any harm. I mean, you wouldn't want to do that with your newly self-bought car.
There was actually an application sort of going in that direction, or at least using the similar concept. Of course, I forgot the name by now because I tested it in the beginnings of Gear VR. It was an app for Gear VR. And the point of it was to convince you not to write messages on your phone while you're driving.
Yeah.
So there were like three or four situations where you almost had an accident, yeah. and then in the end you actually hit the woman that was crossing the street with a baby.
Ow.
And then you were like tossing in a car and all that stuff.
How does the car get tossed around by crashing into
It's a virtual
you
world.
Try to go to the side, you hit something, you started to rotate, and then the glass was everywhere, and
so you don't hit the human.
I think he still did, or he or she or the driver.
Yeah,
but so the person.
Anyways, back to our.
No, I would like have a question about it. Would you think, having that experience, experiencing that car crash, would that make you more likely to buy a car? Does that help you?
That was not the point of buying a car. That was the point of stop writing SMSs on the phone while you're driving.
But if you had that option in like a car configurator that you could actually experience something like that?
I think, in fact,
you could do it for automatic braking, right? I mean, you have all those automation systems.
I mean, yes, of course, you have the driving assistance systems. Yep. Those you could actually test out quite well in VR if you could steer the car.
Yep.
Like you could test out lane assist. What's it called in English?
Just actually maybe even rebuilding the car inside and just putting you in a VR headset there and just letting you test those assistants.
So that is when I said you want to provide a sandbox for the user to try things out.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, of course, you want in the end, you perhaps want a scenario where the car, the customer can safely test the security features of a car, but you don't want to have them experience them having a bad outcome. So basically, you want to reduce their perceived risk in buying and owning this car. So you want to show them that actually you will have a good outcome. This security system will save you.
And going maybe in that direction, also a lot of people just don't read manuals. And I mean, you need to understand how those assistant systems work. I mean, how much they can actually benefit to your security. And maybe having them to do an obligatory, non-obligatory, but some kind of VR training before they actually, you know, can activate some kind of Tesla driving and stuff, or this automated pilot.
Totally possible. The thing is, the point is whether or not you want to build that kind of system into a car configurator.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, okay. But I mean, the car configurator is just actually a starting point from our next upcoming discussion regards what can you do actually in general in business perspective with VR.
Before we go further, I have one more question to David.
Yes.
Yeah.
We just discussed the science behind the user experience design, so to say, behind the business case of this application, behind the utility of the application. What is the science behind the design of this application?
You mean in regards of freedom of the user, or
like the overall user interface and interaction in the world?
I mean, what you can do is, of course, if you want to configure something, or if you want to change any object in your virtual environment, you want to kind of, well, you have like three big principles you have to implement for the user to be able to do anything in VR. It's like that's not only for car configurators, but for other software as well. You have like the locomotion component, where you want the user to somehow move in the virtual environment. You don't want to only see your car from the front, but you also want to see it from the back, maybe from the side. You want to go inside, so you need to have some kind of locomotion system. The second one is you have to have some kind of system interaction, where you need you make some changes to the software, how the software works. Like, for example, change the, well, if we talk about software in general, that's like the system settings, where you change the options of the system. The resolution, the lighting options, etc. So for a car, for example, for a car configurator, that would be I have finished configuring my car, and now I want to save my car somehow, my configuration, so that I can later show it to some friends or family, or maybe bring that saved configuration to a dealer and maybe get more information to my about my configuration. And the third big component is selection and manipulation. And this one is actually or this one can actually be used as a basis for the other two components, because system manipulation and locomotion can also be realized with selection and manipulation. For example, mm-hmm. if you have, you know, for the GVR, you often use the gaze tracker for some kind of waypoints mm-hmm. yeah. or for some kind of objects where you need to stare at them, and then you just teleport there, mm-hmm. something like that. That's locomotion realized using selection and manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
So for a car configurator, well, you can... It really depends on what you want your user to do and what you want him to see. Depending on what you want him to see, you might change the locomotion system.
So let's have two situations. First, as a step one, I want to build my car, so to say. Choose yes. the colors, choose yeah. the features, choose the lights, all the stuff that yeah. we discussed before. And then I want to try it out.
Yeah. Like the first step is, of course, to configure your car, and the second one is to actually sit in there and drive around
exactly.
and test out the different system
mm-hmm.
Systems in the car. So for the first point, you have one big hurdle to overcome, because a car is not only about its visuals. You yes. have, of course, the colors of the car, the headlights, the backlights, the seating options, the leather seats, the sports driving wheel.
Yeah.
And those are all things you can see.
Mm.
And you don't need, for example, you don't need a menu in order to change those. You can actually mm-hmm. just... Maybe put your virtual hand onto the steering wheel and click once, and then you get the options for the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just grab mm-hmm. the steering wheel, throw it out of the window, and another one.
Use voice appears. Commands to drive.
That would be interesting as well for autonomous driving.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you also have parts in the car that cannot be visualized. I mean, how do you visualize software systems in the car?
Yeah.
I would even go one step before. So in some new cars, you have a completely new user interface, physical user interface with the software interface of like internal yeah. computer.
Where you you write on something and then it detects what yeah. you are writing.
That's yeah. actually fancy. What I was actually having in my mind was a rotating wheel, so that you actually had to, like you really had one direction,
yeah.
So you could go right or left, and then you were choosing
joysticks.
Yeah, so very simplified.
It,
how do you try this sort of thing out in virtual reality?
It really depends on what device you are using. I mean, if you were using, for example, some kind of gesture glove where you have yeah. like full finger detection,
yeah.
then full finger tracking, you could actually make the component interactable,
mm-hmm.
and you could actually interact with the component in a very natural kind of way. But on the other hand, how would you realize like abstract interactions with the car with that?
Do you mean
like changing a component of the car? How would you do that with hand tracking?
So the real question is, how do I choose a device that I need? Because I assume that there is a device with endless possibilities. Like, let's imagine I have a glove that has all the 27 degrees of freedom that the hand is tracking. And then I could technically implement that. And to make it better, it has a force feedback.
Yeah, of course. So ultimately to have like the ultimate virtual car experience, you want every single yeah, like every single, let's think for a second, sorry. You want to address every single sense of the user. So if it would be possible to simulate all the systems in the car and simulate all the buttons, all the wheels, then obviously you wanted to go for that. But there's also, a business dimension to the whole thing. So if I want to roll out my VR configuration system on the internet, I have to use that what is present at the user at the user's home. So that in the best case, that could be like an HTC Vive. In the worst case, it might be computer screen and a mouse, mouse, or perhaps even like a cardboard device or something. So in the end, you have to really, really pick your battles there. And
so let's assume I have a situation where I build a car configurator in my shop. So I have a full freedom. Let's call it differently. All the devices that I need, I will have. Oh. How do I choose the device that I need?
Well, from the point of view of car manufacturer, you don't pick the hardware.
You don't. Okay.
You just write your application as unspecific as possible so that many different devices can access the application. But if you would, like, for example, build a configurator for a special use case, and you would need to pick a special hardware for that, you would need some kind of indicator whether or not the hardware suits your needs. So if you want, for example, if you want the user to try out the car systems inside the car, then of course you would want to have some kind of finger tracking, for example, the leap motion. So you can detect like button presses or the user grabbing the steering wheel, things like that. And if you want, for example, to make the user configure the car itself, then a more indirect approach to the whole thing is to interaction is better in my opinion. So you would need some kind of tool in your hand, like for example the Vive controller, where you have the laser pointer and can just point on different cars at car parts, or you can just do pop up a menu on the controller and then just configure the car. So the real interesting point is that right now we have so many different VR hardwares that you cannot really single out the one hardware for your needs.
Exactly.
And yeah, Chris, that's the point you tried to make, I think. that
yes,
at least in my opinion, we really need something or some kind of indicator where you can on one glance see which hardware suits you or suits your application.
So actually I would actually go the other way around and say what is a realistic approach to getting this out on the road. So in the end, if I want to have a configurator that runs on the internet and runs at the customer's home, you will have to check what devices are available. And then you will actually start to rethink the decision because not many devices are the customers for new cars are not usually 20-year-old people.
Yep.
It's they're more like you actually they are like 40 to 50 years at best.
Exactly.
And those devices are not usually these people do not usually have all the devices at home already. So it's really really a trend that it's slowly starting to permeate population or like all the customers. So in the end, if you want to go on the web, you have to address the lowest common denominator, which would be like
a cardboard.
Yeah, yeah, a phone and a cardboard. That is something you can get out to everyone. If you want to go, if you want to have a system at the dealership, you can basically, if you have a good business case, you can use more beefy hardware. You can basically, I think, a Vive setup is always like very good. Middle grounds between having performance, price, and also a very important aspect would be not intimidating the user with having too much hardware. So if the user has to put a glove on, have a marker based tracking, perhaps even some kind of exoskeleton to have like the perfect experience. You can have many different devices, and ideally in an ideal world, I don't want to intimidate the customer by having too much stuff for them to put on. So like, that is very important.
Yes. Imagine you go into a dealership and you want to try out a VR experience. And you take around 5 minutes just to put on all the things you need to put on in order to get that experience.
I actually once tried out a very confusing in this particular context experience. I was on TechCrunch last year, and I had a chance to test Toyota Prius demo with virtual reality, where you actually had a chair that was standing on the 6-dimensional freedom platform, so you could actually control how the chair moves. And so you were putting, I want to say, Vive on, but at this point I don't fully remember, because you also had a steering wheel, so it didn't really matter which headset you had. And you were actually sitting in a chair. So until that point, awesome experience. You know, like everything is there, the chair is moving and all that stuff. But then it turned out that you, the only decision that you make through the whole game is if you go right or left. And you don't even turn your wheel fully or control the car, but it's a binary decision. Either you turn it left or right.
Yeah.
And so throughout the experience, it felt really awesome because the chair was moving and the car was jumping and there were some bandits chasing you. And you picked up some guy that was running away from those bandits. But then you really had no agency whatsoever. Like, you had no control at all about what happens in the game.
Yeah.
So now the real question is it something interesting or a successful approach to the customers where you actually build a scenario and it's not really controllable, but you have a high level of immersion in a sense.
To make sure that the customer doesn't miss the application. I mean, if you would have like free stealing in the free steering in the application that you just described, you know, the customer would just not reach the end, and you want him to go through the whole experience, right? I mean, that's a problem if you give him too much freedom.
On the other hand, it's also a problem if I mean, have you ever tried a different driving experience, VR driving experiences?
Yep.
A lot of those driving experiences, especially if they are not that good, make people sick. And the last thing you want as a car manufacturer is getting people sick while driving your car.
Yeah, that's for sure. But if you play the PSVR driving stuff, what was it called? Project Cars?
Project Cars is on Steam.
Yeah, anyway, this VR racing game from PSVR, I mean, it was quite intense.
So if you're looking at the level of control, level of interaction you want you want to enable to user the user to have, so you have to really tell between use cases. So first, the Toyota experience you just talked about was not, you're not in a like in a configuration like in a buying phase already where you have to decide on how your actual product would look like. It was just like an engagement with a product purchase.
Exactly.
Like an experience, like VR experience where you get to experience the best and the product in which way they intended you to experience it.
The Toyota Prius, basically. The newest model.
Right. So of course, that level of interaction seemed, as you described, first all right to you. And then in the end, you said, could it have been a bit more? Mm. But when you're looking at car configuration, you obviously need to provide a bit of more interaction to actually allow the user to affect the car, to play around with the car. But you also need to take into account what kind of customers and users you have. So if you provide too much choices, like have two different controllers and like a lot of ways to interact, many menus and stuff where you can do stuff, then you will probably lose many of the less technical,
tech savvy people.
Yeah, right. You're going to lose many of them. You want to make it. You want to make your experiences or the options of interaction you provide. You want to have them affordances. You want them to be intuitive for the user, so they can. Yeah, there's a thing called, I think you all know it. It's called the flow experience. Basically, the goal of having the customer learn about the product in a way that the challenges always are in level with the with their skills. So usually you'd not expect every customer to have like high VR and computer interaction skills. So basically you have like an upper line. You can't really do the same stuff you do in like FPS or games and stuff. So you have to have a limited level of really intuitive and really important interaction modes, but you can't really focus efficiency or doing every last small thing with the car. It's just too much for the customer. Also, you don't really expect them to be in there for 2 or 3 hours. So the level of interaction needs to be very adjusted to what you think your customers are capable of.
Oh yeah, that's that another rule. Yeah. If you build a demo for Expo or to show to your customers, it should not be longer than 6 minutes. I've learned that from one of the biggest exhibitors on the last CeBIT or Hannover Messe that was showing virtual reality. And from their research, it pointed out that it should not be too long.
Well, it makes sense because you want to show the experience to as many people as possible. So if
it's not from the perspective of how many people can you show it per day. It's from the perspective of how long can the user keep his attention, keep his interest in the particular application during a demonstration phase.
It would be quite interesting to know if the attention span of the users were longer, like 10 years ago.
It's not about the attention span, really. It's about the context, you know? You're in the context of seeing a lot of different solutions around, and you just want to get an idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Therefore, it should not be too long. The follow-up question here is, how does it apply to the car configurators? Like, if you access the website home, how long should you spend with the car configurator?
Well, as long as you want to, because it's a quite heavy decision you are making. Imagine you want to buy a new car. A new car costs like tens of thousands of euros or dollars, mm-hmm. depending on where you live. And it's not something you spend every day. No. So you need to be able to take your time making that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So from like in a utilitarian perspective, you want to spend as little as possible time there to get the job done. As long as you get good, efficient result.
As short as possible, but as long as you need to.
Basically that, yeah.
Yep.
So but if you're looking at it, if you're providing like a positive, enjoyable experience, then perhaps when you go out shopping for clothes, or perhaps in your example, perhaps I don't know, technical stuff, computer stuff, VR stuff, then perhaps you don't just spend the time you really just need. But going shopping also means spending time, having fun shopping.
Mm.
So if you create an enjoyable experience, you get people into a flow where they actually lose track of time. So if you can get that done, you can do more than a few minutes.
Okay.
But if you don't, you can't.
Yeah. Now we can come back finally to my question, whether and what there still needs to be researched and what has to be, you know, being taken account of and what can be implemented for business, doing business. So B2B, B2C. What are the challenges? And we came today already across the point where Yuda said that there's basically no reference.
Yeah.
And what you, Sebastian, just described is, we need to create a flow, we need to create this and that, which is awesome if you can do it, but how to do it? Is there still a lot of research that has to be done, background, basic research, how to create those effects? Is there something more? And what are the benefits in general? Like going away from the car configurator, but like what can you imagine being done with it?
With VR or?
Mm-hmm. But first, what is the background research that needs to be done in order that we can build the best flow inducing and other applications?
So I think the most basic research, there's a lot of research that has already been done, particularly in the 90s when there was the first wave of VR. And when I first started looking for sources and like research for my thesis, I thought, yeah, it's kind of a new topic, and then I found out it wasn't. So there's a lot of research out there.
Exactly.
So I guess the most basic research is done, and what you do have to go is like specific. You really need to go and have empirical studies for specific use cases. So I think I don't think there's a lot of need for really groundwork stuff, because I think we really have structure, and like we do know many constructs. We have telepresence, we have flow. We can do a modeling of the experience, but what needs to be, I think the most work is in getting to do is basically in making VR usable, making VR experiences usable for different kinds of people. So usability and having 3D user interaction that needs to be there needs to be more research there, so we can we don't lose many users when interacting.
I think the biggest hurdle in regards of interaction right now really is the hardware, because there is no standardized hardware for VR. I mean, everyone tries out different interaction concepts, like track gloves with finger tracking, the controllers, the motion controllers for the Vive or for the Rift, and optic trackers for hand tracking the Leap Motion. Then there's the full body suits, the motion suits for full body tracking. Then there's different solutions for haptical feedback, force feedback. There's just so many different devices that you don't really know where to start, and especially what to develop for. I mean, right now we have the Rift and the Vive as two the most prominent competitors out there. So most likely everyone who is developing for VR right now is developing for either the Rift or the Vive. Maybe for the Gear VR, but in my opinion, mobile VR doesn't take the cut right now, or that doesn't make the cut right now, because it doesn't have positional tracking yet.
Not the popularized one.
Yes. But in order to for VR to really be VR, we need positional tracking. I think there's no way around that. Otherwise, you will see people getting sick around everywhere.
Pretty much.
So the devices are really not the output devices, like the visuals are not really the problem. I don't see that, because visuals will only be getting better in the next few years. But the challenge in making VR accessible lies in the input systems. If you can design hardware which makes it the two big input methods, like the real interactions and the magical interactions you can only do in VR, like, for example, making things move you don't even touch. If you can make a device that makes both these interaction methods feel good and feel natural, then you're a winner.
Isn't it too early for standardizing the hardware?
I think so.
Of course. We're still in the testing phase. I mean, on one hand, you need experimental hardware, because you need to try out every option there is. I mean, we even have EEG hardware. I mean, reading brain waves. How fucked up is that?
A lot. Very, very, very fucked up.
Yeah.
I think that's the right description at this point.
The point is, we can actually do that. I mean, right now the Mayo is reading muscular activity.
Well,
and
it is not doing.
Maybe the one that they will spend $1.4 billion that they got invested.
It doesn't matter. The thing is,
they got $140 million.
Okay.
But they get the data. The only thing is that they cannot process the data. Because they have too much data, they just can't process it.
I think the rather bigger problems that they had was their first device that I actually bought, and I have it.
Me too.
It's one of the most useless devices I ever bought. Even though the technology itself is very interesting, I don't think that the processing power is the bottleneck. But it's a combination of
no, it's not the power.
I mean, the calculation.
It's the algorithms. I mean, you need to make sense out of the data you get.
Well, okay.
And for that, you need some kind of recognition patterns.
I'm saying that the price that determines the sensors that they can use, so the electrodes, is rather, suggesting that the sensors are not as good, so you have more noise compared to the signal. Then again, you put it on an arm, you don't know how the user will put it on, you have hairs in between. So initially, I guess you would have to shave your your hand or something. I mean, there are many factors. And when you measure those things, for example, for prosthetic applications, right, mm-hmm. where you control your artificial limbs, mm-hmm. you can use muscle
activity, but
it involves rather different sensors and also different form factor.
So you are suggesting that if you change the hardware, the thing of reading muscle activity could actually become real for VR.
Sure. No, definitely.
So when you're talking about all this fancy hardware and having
that
many
no
different
one has.
That no one has many different and that's an important point. So why are we actually sitting here today? So there was already an VR revolution in the 90s and it failed and nowadays mm-hmm. it's back. So why is it back? Because it's accessible, because mm-hmm. it's partially mm-hmm. highly integrated and because it's gotten cheaper and it works. Yep. And so that is having a device that is highly integrated mm-hmm. And has a price point that supports many different business cases, makes it accessible to a lot of business areas, particularly in marketing and in sales. Mm-hmm. Like in the years before, like many VR solutions, like having a cave or stuff, what was limited to very expensive operations in like design stuff and engineering stuff, where you, but only if you were like, if you had like very very big operation, then you could do this stuff. But most people couldn't, and nowadays, so what needs to be done is mm-hmm. the devices need to be more highly integrated. Like I'm thinking, like one device that is highly integrated is like the Microsoft HoloLens. Mm-hmm. So that is like a mixed reality device that has room tracking built in, has positional tracking built in, has like voice recognition built in, lots of stuff built in that is useful. Okay, it's not really like the display technology, the field of view is not really there, but that is the direction that is interesting for business customers because it's highly highly integrated. And I can roll out a single device to someone. I can explain a single device to someone that makes it accessible to
business cases. That's a small advantage compared to Meta, even though Meta's screen is like really way better.
To be honest, for the type of customers that Microsoft and Meta are addressing, I find Meta by far better responsive. So long you don't want to go outside, which with HoloLens doesn't really work anyway, or you don't want to go to a shop floor that is most likely too complicated for HoloLens to handle, there is really no difference in use cases
for
both. It
is, because what Sebastian just described is the way how you roll out the hardware, the software, and you roll out the whole ecosystem. And it's true that the HoloLens is one device. You don't need anything else. You don't need an additional PC, even though it's not a big problem. And then you have the App Store. You have like the ecosystem around to distribute it. I guess you can go with the remote control in it and fix something. So there is a whole Microsoft ecosystem, maybe not perfect, but around it.
But for business ecosystem, for B2B solutions, ecosystem is not that important because you need your custom solution.
But you still need to distribute it.
So what you want to focus on is your custom business logic. You don't want to you don't need your custom solution for voice recognition. So that is something you want to have in every device, and I want to that is something that is being addressed by Amazon, by Google, by Microsoft right now. Yes, there are organizational constraints. Not every data can be sent out to the cloud, but the principle of having, and then then I support when David says we need standardized stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think we can gain speed by standardizing the VR device that has everything and can do everything, because that would be really expensive.
Yeah,
yeah.
And we need to tailor devices to use cases.
Just to say it, I don't want the VR hardware to be compressed down into one hardware in one single hardware system and for everyone to use that. That's not my point there.
Why not?
Monopole.
Because it would be boring.
Yeah. That's
I mean,
for sure.
We are talking about cars. You have different car manufacturers as well. Wouldn't it be boring if everyone would be driving the same car?
Yes.
Isn't that what's going to happen to Tesla one day?
No.
But yeah, anyways, what did I want to say? I forgot. Sorry.
You don't want to have universal one hardware, right?
Yes, because different software solutions, of course, need different approaches and different input approaches, as well as different maybe not only input approaches, but also viewing approaches for some systems. AR or MR makes more sense than VR, especially if you are trying to display virtual data in a real context. Then, of course, AR and MR makes more sense than VR. But on the other hand, if you want to do something that, for example, work in a closed environment or do stuff you cannot do in real life or teleport yourself to some place that doesn't even exist, then of course VR is your choice.
And with that touch, this general touch, I think we need to round up.
Yeah.
Our listeners need to go back to work or to sleep or
to do science.
Whatever they do after they listen to our podcast.
Mm. Yeah. What does he do actually after the podcast? That's a good question.
Dear audience, write us some anecdotes.
What do you do after the podcast?
You don't want to know.
We have to cut the audio. We have to post-process it. We have to write show notes.
We need to go drinking with the guests.
Oh, wait. That was not on my agenda.
It was on mine.
No. I hope that in general, even though this is a very specific topic, it was quite informative for everyone who was listening. If you're not happy with anything, give us a feedback. But I'm pretty sure you are. Without further ado, I would thank our lovely guests for joining.
Thank you for
having
us. Great
fun for me.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's always fun to do it in person.
Yeah, of course.
No, that's for sure. And maybe you also noticed that we have improved audio quality. To everyone who was complaining, we did it. And now we sound better.
Not complaining, providing us feedback.
Providing, yeah. I mean, yeah. You have been providing feedback. That's true. Constructive feedback, and we improved it. If you feel anything else that you want to tell us, comment in the comments, subscribe your RSS, share it with your friends, and yeah, have a great week. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Bye.